Elvis Costello is probably one of the world's most famous songwriters.
Infamous, aren't you?
Today, he publishes a new memoir called Unfaithful Music and Disappearing Ink. It is a hoss of a book. It's nearly 700 pages of good, bad, and sometimes poetic memories from his long career. And a lot of memories about his father.
With all due respect to my mother, she raised me, but writing a book about your mother going, "Did you brush your teeth? Is that coat warm enough? Have you had enough to eat?" You can't really make a dramatic story about that.
What he can make a dramatic story of is how his father, the working musician and bandleader Ross McManus, left the family when Costello was around 7 years old. Elvis Costello told me one reason he wrote this book was to chronicle the few times he actually spent with his father.
He enjoyed the robust health of a man who knew about the restorative powers of Bushmills whiskey and never took an aspirin until he was about 79 and then developed Parkinson's. And when he was in his last illness, I sat and tried to talk to him and keep him in the present, you know, because dementia was developing. And when I actually tried to recall our times together, I ran out of experiences very quickly.
Huh.
In fact, I may have written all of them down in the book. That's how few they were.
Yeah. There's a chapter in the book that's called Unfaithful Music, and that's part of actually the title of this book.
Mm-hmm.
This chapter is about that great song of yours, Allison.
Allison, I know this world is killing you.
And I was wondering if you could read page 187. There's two short paragraphs.
187. I believed that Allison was a work of fiction, taking the sad face of a beautiful girl, glimpsed by chance, and imagining her life unraveling before her. It was a premonition, my fear that I would not be faithful, or that my disbelief in happy endings would lead me to kill the love that I had longed for.
Well, I see you got a husband now. Maybe leave your pretty fingers lying in the wedding cake. You used to hold him right in your hand. I bet it took all he could take.
You have said that the sad face of this beautiful girl was somebody you saw in a supermarket, basically, and
yeah,
inspired
that was some
this.
that. I suppose I just had a momentary crush on this girl, but in a way, the song became a premonition of my own, you know, ability to be constant.
I mean, basically, you're talking about being unfaithful to your wife, to your family?
Yes.
Yeah. And your dad wasn't faithful either?
No.
Do you think that in some ways you were bound to be like him?
No, I really don't. That makes it less forgivable. And, and I'm not inclined to say, like father, like son, or that because I came from a gently broken home that I would inevitably break one up myself. I can acknowledge what's in the past. You can't go back and change it.
So this was the late 70s, and you were making this very catchy pop music. But there was a lot of other stuff going on in the 70s in music with punk and rock. You weren't necessarily the glamorous type. You know, you weren't doing the Ziggy Stardust, like, shiny jumpsuit thing.
I worked for Elizabeth Arden for a while.
Yes, you did.
I did for several years, and I could get cheap lipstick and cheap mascara, and I still never made it in glam rock.
So, I mean, you did later get cast as the angry type.
I've explained that very clearly in the book.
You have.
I have. It's because I have a gap in my teeth.
and
although this makes people such as Jerry Lewis and Jane Birkin sex symbols, it just makes me sound aggressive. And that's really true. I mean, I'm making a joke, obviously, because there were things in the songs that I said emphatically and things I meant. And I certainly didn't help myself by going along to a couple of my early interviews very drunk.
You know, I think Americans might remember you, the sort of the angry you, from an episode in 1977. You were appearing on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. You were supposed to play your latest single called Less Than Zero, but then this happened.
I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. There's no reason to do this song here.
Radio. One, two.
My argument was not really with the SNL. My argument was with my own record company, because they were just going on at me to do this song. And I said, I'm not sure that even people know what this song is about in America, because it was written about very specific English circumstances. I had a brand new song ready to go that I thought was the one we should play, and I did play. And of course, because I didn't tell the producers about it, it was a little bit of a stink, as they say, a kerfuffle. And we were told we would never work on American television again. There was a period where I didn't appear on TV in America, about 3 years. And that was 12 years before Lorne Michaels let me back in the building.
We read somewhere that Lorne Michaels was giving you the finger from the booth. Is that true?
I'm not going to say that's true. Bill Murray told me that at the 25th anniversary party. He said, don't let Lorne tell you he was on the joke. I remember him doing that. So I'm not saying it. Bill is saying it.
Your dad, he died in 2011. He had Parkinson's, and then he had a brain tumor. And you write in the book that at one point you thought you couldn't bear to write any more songs if you couldn't play them for your father.
No, not write them so much as record them, because it was the taking the record home. I always used to like playing the record and see what he took out of it. And he would always listen in and find the center of it, you know, the center of it for him. And I was always encouraged by that, because I know there is no one way to listen. There is no absolute right and wrong about music.
So you write that you couldn't record another song if you couldn't
play
it
for a while, no. And then I stumbled into a recording collaboration with The Roots. And the oddest thing happened. Quest and a keyboard player who plays with The Roots sometimes, Ray Angry, sent me a composition. And within an hour or so, I had written this song called The Puppet Has Cut His Strings, which was almost like moment-by-moment recitation of my dad's passing.
The breath is slow in shallow town. The sky is bright and decent blue.
I told myself I wasn't ready to write about that, or I would never write about it, but it just came out. In the end, music was playing in the room where my father left this earth. And I suppose that's something that I return to throughout the book in thinking about how music has served me as being my companion. It's got me into all kinds of trouble, but also got me all sorts of other things as well, all sorts of experiences that I wouldn't trade.
That's Elvis Costello. His new book is Unfaithful Music and Disappearing Ink. Elvis, thank you so much.
Thank you. That was very... very interesting, thank you.
Can't feel my fingers anymore.